Pauline, you spoke to us this morning about journaling, and I imagine this could well be an essential aspect of the journaling. Given a few names, I'm calling it here awareness examine. Good musicians take great care of their instruments. Violinists are constantly checking the tension on the strings to keep their violins in tune. In a similar way, if we're committed to a life of prayer, we need to monitor our lives. For the quality of prayer is best assessed by examining our attitudes and reactions. As Jesus said, you know the tree by its fruit. So, and again, this is on the web, but running through just the list of things that are suggested. Place yourself in God's presence and ask, what am I grateful for? Ignatius of Loyola, among many other gifts he gave us, said, always begin your prayer with gratitude. There'll be times, there's been times in my life, there'll be times in your life, I'm sure, where gratitude is the last thing you're feeling. And Ignatius promised, and I'm sure he's right, that if you look long enough, there'll be something to be grateful for. And it's important to look for it. Otherwise, the dark clouds can meet and shut out the light. So he says, suggestion from Ignatius, place yourself in God's presence and ask, what do you feel grateful for today? And don't leave that till you find something, because you will find something. Ask Jesus to let me see my day through his eyes. How does he see the day, my day? Ask Jesus to show me now what he was trying to show me during the day. The good and the bad. But I was too busy or whatever to notice it. It's never too late. Ask him to alert you and me to it now. What did I miss? Delay on anything that stands out. And if it's something good that stands out, and it's very likely it will be, then once again, express gratitude for it. If it's something that wasn't good, then express your sorrow. Pray to be more attentive and sensitive to God's inspiration for the evening, if you're doing this in the early evening, for the rest of the day. And conclude with an act of longing and love. And you may wish, I imagine you probably will, to journal this as you're journaling the day. It might only take you 5 minutes, this, but it's a suggestion that people make. Here's another kind of prayer that we can all do. It's got different names. Prayer of quiet, it's sometimes called, prayer of presence. Teresa of Avila writes, I'm not asking you to do anything more than look at him. Now, you might normally go through a meditation such as I took you through before. And there's hundreds of scenes in the gospel where you can do that, because you're always part of it. And that may be a constant kind of prayer. But that can lead us somewhere. And maybe what Teresa is saying, that can simplify. You can do it very quickly after a while because the feelings are all accustomed to. I'm not asking you, she says, to do anything more than look at him. can keep you from turning the eyes of your soul towards the Lord? He never takes his eyes off you. And she writes, it's good to reflect for a time, but we shouldn't always weary ourselves in seeking these reflections, but just remain there in his presence with the intellect, imagination, quiet. If we can, we should occupy ourselves in looking upon him who is looking at us. Keep him company. Talk with him. Pray to him. Humble yourself before him. Delight in him. It's a prayer we can all do. And now for the rest of this little time together, I want to focus on contemplation. The simplest prayer. The best thing, I think, to say about contemplation, and all the writers say this, is it's not a prayer you can do. And that's great. So relax. You can't do it, I can't do it, no one can do it. Contemplation is a gift and it's from God. Babies live in a world of immediacy. Smell, taste, touch, experience, body, and inside too. So I suppose the only prayer that a baby can actually pray is contemplation. Because it hasn't yet learned to reason and mediate the world through meaning and understanding and values and directions and choices and all that. That's training brings that. But quite at the beginning, the baby can just do what you know babies do. But it includes, because God is love and God is always offering contemplation to everybody, no matter how little or old. So a baby, I've never actually seen this written, but for God's sake, it seems obvious to me, so I'll say it. If you can find someone writing to contradict it, tell me and I won't say it again. A baby is contemplating, experiencing, unable to sort it out, God loving. Here's John of the Cross. Contemplation is nothing but a hidden, peaceful, loving inflow of God. If it's given room, it will inflame the spirit with love. It might be worth telling your nieces or your great nieces, or in my case, your great great nieces and nephews, that when they experience teenage first love, they're actually contemplating. Maybe no one tells them, so they don't know. They know they're drawing up and text and all the rest of it, and excitement. But for heaven's sake, God is actually drawing them into love. Pure contemplation lies, says John of the Cross, in receiving. And it's wonderful. We can't do it. This is pure God giving God's self to you and to me and to every single human being in this world. This is what God is, self-giving love. It's for everyone. We're not waiting on the gift. The gift is there. We need to welcome it. Ian Matthew, whom I referred to earlier, writes, contemplation is prayer when I'm no longer a tourist. Speaking to adults here who've started to understand the world mediated by meaning, of course, and That's the importance of the catechism and church tradition and teaching and all the rest of it, is to open our minds to meanings that are profound and not just trivial. So contemplation is prayer when I'm no longer a tourist, where sense has shifted to spirit, where plenty of insights and aspirations have given way to a less picturesque, more total form of togetherness with God. And what's different about it from the prayer of presence or prayer of quiet, which I've just referred to earlier, is that this is simply received. I can't do it. I can't repeat it. I can want it. John of the Cross writes, "When the appetite has been fed somewhat and has become in a certain fashion accustomed to spiritual things and has acquired some fortitude and constancy," this isn't the only time, but this might be our experience, "God begins to wean the soul and place it in a state of contemplation." Might involve us adults discovering the child again in us. It's well and truly alive, but neglected perhaps. And maybe this space can help that happen. Reawakening the teenager in us, the young lover in us. Getting in touch, as Pauline said, with our deepest yearning and attraction. All of that. But it's God who's weaning us away from anything else and taking us into a place of communion. John of the Cross. "When it happens that we're conscious of being placed in solitude and in a state of listening, consciously it may only take 3 minutes, 5 minutes, who knows? Teresa of Avila says it never goes for terribly long. The experience of it, consciousness of it, awareness of it, but whatever the time, when it happens that we're conscious of being placed in this attitude, this solitude, and in a state of listening, we should even forget the practice of loving attentiveness. We don't want to look, reflect back on ourselves and notice where we are. That's taking our attention completely in the wrong direction. We're there, but that's not a subject for reflection. It's a focus is not on us. We should even forget the practice of loving attentiveness so as to remain free for what the Lord desires of us. We should make use of that loving attentiveness only when we don't feel ourselves placed in this solitude." So let me go back to the prayer of presence, which is something we can do. Or we go back to the meditation, sit by the well with the woman there in Samaria. Or we stand at the foot of the cross with the blood, whatever you're setting out to reflect on. That's what we're doing. John of the Cross likens prayer to the playing of a musical instrument. Inspired by God and enabled by God's grace in active prayer, meaning the prayer we can all do, choose to do and do, we are, as it were, practicing the art of playing the strings of our heart and mind, learning to ponder the mystery of God and enjoy the harmony of experienced communion. So we go back to the well or back to the foot of the cross or into the agony or wherever you're taken. In passive prayer, received prayer, welcomed prayer, We leave it to God to guide our fingers over the strings. God plays on the chords of our heart and soul and mind, inspiring us. Teresa writes, while you're repeating some vocal prayer, you're praying the Magnificat, or you're praying the Hail Holy Queen, Salve Regina, or whatever. While you're repeating some vocal prayer, it's possible, says Teresa, from her own experience, for the Lord to grant you perfect contemplation. You might have been, a lot of us were brought up, thinking contemplation was the top rung of a ladder. No, it's the simplest form of prayer altogether. It's a received prayer of communion. As I suggest, babies have it. So it's not something we strive for or leave to a perfect. You're enkindled in love without understanding how. You know that you're rejoicing in the one you love, but you don't know how. You're well aware that this is not a joy that you can attain through understanding. It's not a technique you can learn. You embrace it without understanding how, but you do understand that it's a blessing that you're receiving. This, says Teresa, is perfect contemplation. In contemplation, we can do nothing. Thanks be to God. God does everything. The work is God's alone and far transcends human nature. When we let go the attempt to control our prayer, that doesn't mean don't prepare your meditation before you go to bed at night and let the subconscious play with it during the night. A lot of us were trained to do that. You probably were. We don't neglect that. We don't have nothing to do when we go to prayer. But we're always open to be taken. But when we let go the attempt to control our prayer, we allow a gentle drawing inward. God is dwelling in our heart and he's drawing us in to the well. Earlier we were trimming our sails to tack with the gentle breeze. Now we're experiencing ourselves being drawn to let go and yield to an attraction that draws us and over which we exercise no control. These are my words, you may agree or not with them, they're not quoting any saint or anything, but the recollection experienced here is not the result of our decision to simplify our method of praying. We can make that decision, do it carefully, but we can. Prayer of quiet, prayer of presence, good. But the recollection we're experiencing here in contemplation is not the result of that decision. It's not the fruit of our controlling our breathing or practicing a word, a prayer word. I remember years ago in this place, actually, God knows when I've been here for so many times, been spoiled, haven't I? But I remember up there, just up there, I was practicing, we used to call them a mantra, and I've called it a mantra there, but I've learned since it's probably not the right word, a prayer word. And mine was, typically I was the subject of the verb, and I'm telling Jesus something. I'm in you, I'm telling him. And he's telling me, I'm still talking. I'm in you, breathe out. You ready? Breathe in, and you're in me. It's a nice prayer. Comes from the John's Last Supper. But halfway through it, and that's a long time ago, and still it's my only mantra or whatever. Halfway through, at last, at long last, I was listening, and he said to me, he started to talk, not me, and he said, I'm in you. And he told me, you're in me. That's a lot better, isn't it? Than me telling Jesus what's going on. I didn't hear him, you know what I mean? So the breath changed. So in breathing in, I'm in you. And then we breathe out, and you're in me. So Jesus is the source of the breath. And that just happens to be my little experience of it. But the experience of contemplation is something we're powerless to induce. We can practice the prayer words. We can do that. It's a lovely thing to do. But don't call it contemplation. If you can do it, it's not contemplation. Both Teresa and John warn us not to attempt to manufacture this quiet. It might have happened to you 40 years ago on a holiday somewhere. We've all had experiences like this, and you'd love to be able to do it again. We'll blow you. It's not up to you to do it again. This is God's business. So stop trying to repeat prayer. Because if you do, well, you're doing it, and that's a pity. There's nothing wrong with practicing techniques to quieten ourselves down, so long as we don't confuse this with the quiet that is God's gift, the quiet that comes with passive, received, welcomed prayer, contemplation. So check these thoughts. We're held in being by God. We believe that. So we can experience contemplative prayer. Because God is giving God's self to you and me all the time. God is the giver. And the giving is God's self. And if we welcome that, that's contemplation. Whether we use the word or not. 2, God wants everyone to experience this loving communion. Of course, obvious, but it needs to be said. It's not an esoteric gift. It's not something we can initiate or learn or achieve or control. It's a grace. We can only welcome it and receive it. Here's, in case you're thinking maybe some of my words are a bit hard, here's John of the Cross. Are you ready to get a punch in the jaw? It amazes me, says John of the Cross, to see what goes on nowadays. Anyone who does tuppence worth of meditation, if they reach a certain quietness and are aware of a train of inner words, baptizes it all as coming from God and thinks that's how it is. They say, God said to me. I got this answer from God. John of the Cross says, it's not that at all. God is always beyond. Beyond. Infinitely beyond. I had this childish image of heaven for a long time. I didn't know what to do with it, but you know, you go to heaven, you've kind of arrived. And then some people said, oh, when you arrive, you're saying, holy, holy, holy. I'm thinking, oh my God, that sounds boring to me, for the whole of infinity adoring God or whatever. And then Karl Rahner saved me, as he often saves any of us. He's such a good, clear thinker. He's not popular these days in some circles, but he's fantastically good. Karl Rahner says, no. The difference between heaven and now is that now our search, our responding to God is hampered by just us, original sin, if you want to put it that way, or sin, or just all the stuff that I don't have to explain to you. In heaven, there's no hampering. It's a continuous, onward, inward, infinite journey into the mystery of God that never ends. It can't end because it's deeper and deeper love. That sounds more exciting to me than the other. God's always beyond our comprehension or anything. God sustains everything, but he's not grasped by anything. If I think I've got God, well, you're all sensible enough to know that I'm in a very dangerous position, or I'm very sick, but I do need help. God remains absolute mystery, beyond all our words. The word love is the best one we can manage because of thanks to that lovely man, John, the evangelist and gospel and epistle writer. But then love needs a lot of tuning and care. God remains absolutely mysterious. Yet we need to encounter God. We're made for God. Together, says Ian Matthew, these two truths, that God is transcendent, but we need to be in communion, these account for most of the deviations in human living. Trying to fill the need with something else, because we can't have God, yet we've got this infinite longing, so we fill it up with all the stuff. Or our God is too small and we trivialize God to make sure we've got it. Everyone around us can tell us that we're off the planet, but we don't notice it. And some people might even cheer and say hallelujah, but it's wrong. But both truths have to be held. And I conclude with that little scene, and I keep forgetting which English cathedral it's outside. Chester, thank you. That quite lovely Jesus at the well, that is. Seems to be having a good time, do you think? And she doesn't seem to mind. So there's that lovely encounter. Thirst takes us back to Dominic's well over there. And Jesus says to her and to us, conclude with this, if only you knew the gift of God. If you drink the water that I will give you, that I will give, you will thirst for nothing else. The water that I will give will become in you a spring of water gushing up to eternal life. And I want to conclude this session with you with a piece of music, Only You in My Heart.